Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 31st of July, and I'm recording at 9:30 p.m., and that's British summer time here in London. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook of the various asset classes. But first, let's start with the immediate environment, and then move forward there with some projections. Now, right now, stock markets are in that generally unfavorable, or I should say, period of general underperformance, and that's on average, and it runs from the beginning of May through the end of October. And certainly, stock markets are far from booming in this environment, or at least for the most part. Now, of particular interest are two markets, and that's China. And I'll take that first, and then we'll have a look at Wall Street. But China heavily manages its economy. It's a command economy. And its leaders have also been heavily influencing what goes on in the stock market here overall. Now, Xi Jinping, who leads the show there, certainly has a lot of power. He's easily the most powerful leader in China since Deng Xiaoping. But maybe lacking some of the subtlety. In any rate, he probably knows, and he and his colleagues probably know less about the way stock markets perform than everybody listening to this audio, which should be no great surprise. And corner they painted themselves into is the fact that they encouraged the stock market to move higher. They cut interest rates so that it could move higher, and they talked the market up as well. And they as the market did start moving higher. They apparently had either no regulatory, I find that impossible to believe, but poor regulatory supervision of what was going on, not least regarding their broking sectors. So what happened is a lot of investors, large and small, and mostly small, started moving into the stock market. And using easy money, the brokers encouraged them to leverage their portfolios, turning novice investors into novice speculators. The market took off, accelerated upwards, as you know, quickly became an overvalued bubble. The government then panicked and talked about reining it in, and triggered, as we see following all bubbles, a very, very sharp retracement. And given that so many people were highly leveraged, they very quickly lost a fair amount of money. Now, after that fiasco and embarrassment, the government is trying to steady the ship, as it were. Well, that's not going to be easy, because how are they actually going to do that? Are they going to have to pump in a huge amount of money to lift the market, or are they going to leave it to its own devices, in which case I would think that it would almost certainly move somewhat lower as more people moved away and were reluctant to reinvest. Just going to have a quick drink of water. So, they're going to pump. It's a hands-on activist regime. But how much money are they going to pump in? and they probably lost some confidence as well, so they're not sure how to actually manage this. And I think it's going to take some time here overall. Now, is this of interest to subscribers generally? Well, I think it is. First, that China, being the world's second largest economy, and also the biggest producer of biggest consumer rather of commodities, is going to have a very considerable influence on the global economy. And if we get more uncertainty, turbulence, weakness in the Chinese stock market, that's not going to help confidence in the overall global economy, which is already at a somewhat low level, as you'll be well aware. So, but my feeling from an investing standpoint, you know, let's take the buy low, sell high approach here, that China is probably quite attractive, but you have to be selective. The A shares are no bargain. They're no longer ridiculously expensive, but they're not, again, let's just repeat the point, they're not a bargain. Where we do see bargains is in Hong Kong, in the Hang Seng Index, and also the China Enterprise Index. They're some of the best bargains that are available in the markets today. And if you can buy some companies, particularly established, powerfully established companies with good dividends, and that are selling at anything from between 8 to 13 times earnings, those are worthy of a certain amount of interest. Okay, moving on from, but my feeling is it's going to take some time to sort out this this Chinese problem, and also it's going to be, if it happens, if they sort it out a little bit more quickly, and then the government's going to have to throw an enormous amount of money at the market. They may do that. It'll be interesting to see. Meanwhile, Japan is in a clear and very, very strong overall bull market. I think it's a secular bull market, as in the very long term. And again, it's had another good day in here today, but it's just been performing well generally. If I look at the Nikkei 225, it's up 13.94%, so nearly 14% this year, and that's in U.S. dollars. So for Japanese investors in yen, it's up nearly 18% so far this year, but 14%, as I say, in U.S. dollars. Whereas China is very, very mixed, with the Shanghai Composite Index. Well, actually, it's interesting. I haven't been studying these in the last few days, but the Shanghai Composite Index is still up just over 13%. Again, in U.S. dollars, despite the very big fall that is seen overall. And the Hong Kong Hang Seng Index is up 4.4%, and the China Enterprise is actually down about 7% on the year overall. While the multiples were much lower in the Hang Seng Index and also the H-share index, and the dividends higher, nevertheless, when investors in the A-shares could not get out of their positions, bigger investors there, they sold shares in Hong Kong, where they had not been frozen. Okay, looking at some of these other markets in the Asia Pacific region, India is certainly hugely interesting. Had a good day here today, incidentally, up 1.5% on the Sensex index overall. this is a good overall bull market. And it's in a lengthy consolidation phase, and that could quite easily continue for a few more months. But then I think we'll see this a bull market move higher. One of the reasons for that is that India will be probably growing faster than just about any other economy going. Vietnam might give it a run, but India will certainly have the best growth rate of large countries and an economy that is, well, it's growing at a good rate. Now, strong growth rate doesn't necessarily mean that you get a strong stock market performance. That's the consolidation that we're seeing right now. But while it's in a trading range, valuations are improving, and that overall growth will eventually underpin a further move to the upside. And Western investors and politicians, let's talk more about the politicians, are very interested in India. They would like to see a stronger India as a stabilizing factor in the Asia Pacific region. So, it's got, since Narendra Modi became prime minister, it has become much closer to the United States and is generally well regarded around the globe. Okay, looking at the European region here, a little bit firmer in here today. We're getting a little more rally now following the short-term oversold condition, and that was created, of course, by the whole Grexit saga, which you'll be very familiar with. I like European markets at this stage, and I have a long trading position in Germany and some long-term investments in Germany, favoring the autonomies, including the big automobile manufacturers in Germany. And you've got quantitative easing, which certainly is likely to help the European stock markets overall. And you, incidentally, of course, Japan also has the quantitative easing, and those are major factors behind their performance this year, which is certainly reasonable, and going forward, because this QE is going to continue for quite a long time in Japan and also within the European Union. I don't like the whole somewhat socialist and undemocratic system within the EU, and my guess is that we'll probably be seeing some changes and moving a little bit closer to a more of a European common market and less bureaucratic control from Brussels. I hope so, at any rate. But that's a longer-term point, and that's a political issue. So we'll just have to wait and see how that actually develops. But the European markets should benefit once we get out of this period of May through October underperformance. Looking at Wall Street, if you look at a chart of the Dow or the S&P, it's not exactly reassuring, although they're still just within the overall upward trends. There's certainly a big loss of momentum. They haven't gone anywhere this year. The Dow's actually down just under 1 percentage point on the year, and the S&P a little better, but it's only up 2% on the year. So they've been somewhat choppy, but within quite a tight trading range for virtually the whole year. And that's after being in a very consistent overall upward trend. So if you've got a market that's now primarily ranging, that tells us that supply and demand is pretty well equally in balance. Whereas obviously in an upward, if it's trending higher, you know the demand element is stronger. And if it's trending downwards, you know the supply or selling pressure element is stronger. So equal balance here off in with Wall Street, at least with the S&P and the Dow, after a very, very considerable move to the upside, which is very, very consistent. It stands out so clearly on the charts. Now, the point I want to make, though, is we've got another 3 months to go during this period of underperformance and a time when you have somewhat thinner markets, certainly in the West, because a lot of people are on holiday. And my guess is that given this trading environment, that as far as actively managed funds are concerned, that there are a fair number of managers sitting at their desks and keeping a very, not only a very close eye on the market, but a finger fairly near the sell button if we start to break down. And the auspices are not too good here in the short term, because we've seen that weakness in the utilities index. We've seen also similar weakness in the transports index, which clearly broke their overall upward trends. And we haven't seen much in the way of upside reconfirmation, although the NASDAQ remains a little bit stronger overall. But among these tech shares, again, we have to be careful there. The most iconic share in the world today, and also the largest, is Apple Computers. Well, I think it closed at just under 121.5, and that's very, very close to that 120 level from which it bounced a couple of weeks ago. That's the lower side of the range, and it's also where the 200-day 40-week moving average is can be seen. And if we were to get, I mean, I think Apple's a marvelous company, and it's certainly not expensive, but you know, if people nobody people just hold off on buying and selling increases a little bit, this can break down for a while, and that would certainly drag the Dow lower. Apple's listed in both the Dow and the S&P, but of course it would have a bigger influence on the Dow than the S&P overall. So a little bit nervous environment here overall, but having said that, my feeling is that if we have not seen Wall Street get a 10% plus correction, and I think there's quite a high risk that we could get that 10% plus correction over the next 3 months, but if that has not happened by the end of October, then I think the odds will start to move gradually but steadily in favor of further strength. And one of the reasons for that is that, again, we'll be back in a more favorable overall environment, and also we will be in the presidential election cycle, early stages of the presidential election cycle, and that's usually favorable. On average, Wall Street's done reasonably well during these presidential election cycles. Hope springs eternal is probably the factor there, and you get a lot of bullish promises. So, again, as I say, right now, I'd be careful. I think the risk of that 10% plus correction is higher than it's been at any other time in this bull market cycle to date. But if it hasn't happened by the end of October, my guess is that we'll be seeing the U.S. market breaking up out of these ranges overall. Now, looking further ahead, and of course, I had been saying that we would have a choppy environment this year for stock markets, and I think we've certainly had that, and that a choppy environment has produced a number of 10% plus corrections and even some cyclical bear markets, which I would define as decline of at least 20%. And I think this environment is going to remain until we get get some really positive evidence from Wall Street. Meanwhile, against that background, the ones that will do best in terms of resisting a choppy environment, let alone a correction on Wall Street, will probably be Japan and India, and also Europe, because of the corrections that it's already seen and because of the quantitative easing. But certainly a sharp correction on Wall Street would affect most other stock markets, at least temporarily. Do I expect anything like a big bear market in this environment? No. I think there's too much quantitative easing, and where there isn't quantitative easing, interest rates are mostly really quite low. There's no reason why central banks will be tightening aggressively. I think the Fed will be making a quarter point interest rate cut probably in September. And one of the reasons for that is that they obviously want to start normalizing interest rates, and that's something that will take several years to actually do. But also, if they were to hold off, well, first I think I don't want to get slightly ahead of myself. The Fed has been sending out so many messages on this, saying that yes, they might well do this, but it would it would be a small move, and that they would take their time in normalizing interest rates. So it's not as if we're suddenly going to go into some kind of Fed squeeze. Far from it. So I think that just alone on this trading range, that might be largely discounting that event overall. But to take the other side, I don't think the Fed wants to postpone a quarter point rate hike any further, because if they did, you could quite easily see how people would say, well, you know, there are a lot of smart people in the Fed. If they're not able to raise rates, then maybe the news is even worse than we see. And they would that could spook them. Here overall, that would be the risk, I think, if they delayed a rate hike a little further. So I think they will go on and raise the rate. I don't think it will cause too much damage, but if they do it in September, that's still within this unseasonal period, whereas I've already said the risk of that 10% plus correction is quite high. And looking further ahead, I've said I think we'll still have a somewhat choppy environment over the next few years, but I think the longer term outlook beyond that is very much in favor of a secular bull market. And we may have actually even begun that secular bull market. The last one, as you will recall, started, and have heard me say on a number of occasions, started in 1982 and ran through 1999. Secular bull markets are always followed by very choppy periods, usually a couple of severe bear markets, which we certainly saw, and 2000, 2001, and the sharp fall that we saw in 2008 and early 2009 for some indices. And I think that again, that usually leads to a number of changes. Either valuations come down very significantly, as they did in the beginning, with those at those bear market lows. You also get a more disciplined environment within corporations and within banking sectors, whether voluntarily so or whether imposed, as in the case of the case of the banks overall. And you also get a technology improvement over that lengthy ranging period, which we're seeing in spades this time around because of the rate of the gradually accelerating rate of technological innovation. And that is what is actually going to underpin the next secular bull market. And one of the advantages that we've already seen coming from that technology are cheaper oil prices, thanks to more effective drilling or locating of oil reserves, and of course fracking. And of course also the renewables that we're seeing. So we have already entered an era that I've talked about for a long time of lower energy costs here overall, and that's good for the global economy. Over the last, well, over most of this year, what we've actually seen, and more headlines on, are the problems that this has created for oil exporting countries. Russia's classic example, but they've all been weakened here by the sharp drop in the price of oil. But the flip side of that is that every country rather, that is an oil importer, and the populations at large are major beneficiaries of lower energy prices. High energy prices, of course, are just a major tax on governments, on businesses, and on consumers that goes to the oil producers. Well, those have been lowered very, very substantially, and that's a permanent change, and one that's very beneficial and will be helping to fuel that secular bull market that I look forward to in equities. So basically, my feeling is that by far the best investment opportunities on average will be in stock markets over the next 2 to 3 decades overall. That's something I certainly look forward to. Now, moving on from there to the government bonds, here we have a very different scenario. Government bonds have had a fantastic sort of 35-year plus secular bull market in terms of falling yields. Well, there's earlier this year, we saw the lows. I don't think those lows are going to be challenged. Really, there wasn't much further they could fall, and those lows were also, as I think, an overreaction on the downside, as you usually get in big market trends. And I think we're now in an overall ranging base formation period for in terms of the government bond yields, and that they will be moving up over the long term. They'll probably go on ranging here for at least the medium term, and it could be somewhat longer than that. But the next really significant development is going to be a move to the upside by those government bond yields. But that will require stronger global, clearly stronger global GDP growth, and also a feeling that inflationary pressures are likely to increase. Well, we don't have that evidence of clearly stronger global GDP growth, or what evidence we do have slightly better in Europe, for instance, but it's very patchy. Really, the time when you'll get government bond yields moving up strongly is when we have a synchronized global economic, or you have countries synchronized in a period of global economic expansion, and that causes central banks to raise interest rates to head off inflationary pressures. Well, we're clearly a long way from that right now, so that's not an immediate risk, but it is a risk out there that we can expect to be evident within the next few years. So I think that people who are holding bonds, they're not losing money in this environment, but I think they're on borrowed time, and that they will lose money over the longer term. So I think that the far safer environment is equities. Equities are more volatile than bonds, and the strategy for equities, well, the simplest and oldest one is buy low, sell high. And that still works. Okay, looking at currencies, I think that the U.S. dollar, as I've said before, has ended its overall bear market, secular bear market, and the big move that we have seen starting last year. Is the first evidence of a new bull market for the US dollar. That moved up a little bit too quickly, and trends often do that. It helped to lower US corporate profits, which is one of the reasons why stock market, why Wall Street has been in this trading range, lost upside momentum, in other words. And I think we're in a very lengthy consolidation period. Keep an eye on that dollar index. That's code DXY. It's a little lower in here today. It's at 97.20. But an eventual break above that 100 level that's maintained for more than a day or two will signal the onset of another upward phase. I hope that doesn't occur anytime soon, and I suspect it probably won't. But if it does, that will increase short-term risks on Wall Street, and it would be a little bit unsettling, not least for emerging market countries which borrowed in U.S. dollars when rates were exceptionally low. So the best thing for the global economy is a dollar that's range-bound here for a lengthy medium-term period, and I think that's probably what we're actually going to see. That's certainly what the Fed would like to see, in my opinion. And that's what we've been seeing over the last few months. But the longer-term trend for the dollar is upwards. And I pick to go to the euro. I don't think that the euro is going to survive indefinitely. While we still have a euro, it's a reserve currency. Excuse me. And I wouldn't be thinking in terms of a collapse, which some people have forecast over the last couple of years. Currently, the euro is at 1.0984. We have quantitative easing in the European Union, as you know. We do not have that on Wall Street right now. That alone implies that the euro is likely to slightly underperform the US dollar. But will it be a very dramatic move? Probably not, in my opinion. Commodity currencies remain really very weak. That's understandable, and that's really not going to change until we have clear evidence of a broad recovery taking place in resources prices. And that's not happening right now because of China's slower growth and slow global GDP growth, and also technology, because technology has certainly increased the ability to produce these commodities more cheaply and effectively for the most part. I'm talking about the industrial commodities. But technology also helps in the agricultural commodities as well, in terms of developing hardier, more disease-resistant crops. But these low commodity prices that we see right now are, of course, keeping inflation well under control. And that's a positive development, and we don't see that mentioned often enough, I actually feel. And precious metals, well, I think, you know, I talked about buy low, sell high a few moments ago in another context, but the lower precious metals go, the more interesting they become. But these are weak trends still. They're a little bit oversold here in the short term, so it's possible that we could see some I think relatively minor medium term rallies. But that's the most we could see on the upside. I don't think it's worth buying them for that, unless you're a very quick in and out person. And I think overall we will see these precious metals move lower still before we get a major recovery overall. And on that note, all the very best to all of you. Have a fantastic weekend.